Melody Meyer is Vice President, Policy and Industry Relations for United Natural Foods. She has a blog, Organic Matters, and is involved in various committees and organizations who look out for the best interests of the organic industry. I'm happy to have Melody join the Farm to Table talk. She certainly knows and understands farm to table matters. Now, Melody, I don't think I did justice to all of what you're involved with. Maybe I'm going to invite you to expand a little bit on what you're involved with.
Well, I'm Vice President of Policy and Industry Relations, and I'm also in charge of corporate social responsibility at UNFI. And I'm the executive director of the UNFI Foundation, which aims to support organic agriculture. So our priorities are protecting the biodiversity of our seed supply, fostering the next generation of organic farmers, promoting research and science for organic, and just increasing organic agriculture overall.
Now, how do you have all these lofty goals? I mean, the organization also is a business, and it's involved in delivering products to the market. How did they come to decide that part of what they're going to do is be engaged in this sort of work in behalf of the organic industry?
Well, we believe that giving back to the industry will only help it to grow. And we really believe in being good corporate citizens. It's kind of baked into our DNA. So we really want to grow organic acreage because it will reduce pesticides and herbicides in our waters and in our land. And it also, organic agriculture has been shown to sequester carbon, which is one of the solutions that we can have in our toolkit for climate change.
This gets you involved in a lot of issues, too. One thing I was interested in particular is kind of looking ahead in genetic engineering. You are involved in both some committees and panels and others that are talking about it. And just when people seem to be figuring out what's all involved with GMO, there seems to be a new generation of other technologies. I wonder if you could explain what some of those things are that are on the horizon. I won't ask you to be a scientist on this. I think just share with us what you see coming down the pike that might have implications that we need to be paying attention to.
Yes, thank you. You know, the R&D and the development of what I'll call genetic engineering 2.0 is racing along. The government and private sector is putting, you know, about $50 million into developing new technologies. And we used to be able to understand what a GMO was. It was inserting the gene from one species into another species. Now we're doing really tricky things. We're taking algaes and yeasts, and we're tinkering with their DNA so that they're producing unique objects, unique materials that have never before really been on the planet. These materials are bioidentical to things like different flavors, vanilla, or fragrances. I think DuPont or one of the companies is working on a synthetic stevia that takes away some of the taste profiles that aren't needed or wanted with consumers. So there's a lot of new products out there that are coming not from soil-based agriculture, but from labs where they're genetically engineering yeast and algaes to produce materials that they wouldn't normally produce. And the danger there is twofold. One is algaes and yeast are some of the building blocks of life. They're everywhere. That's where life comes from. And if there is contamination somehow, if those engineered algaes and yeast get out into the environment, there could be a situation where we can never take that back.
That is painting a picture of raises lots and lots of questions, and it's something I have a lot of questions. I sure don't have the answers. I'm glad you're drawing attention to these areas. I want to go back then. Let's just back up to the more simpler controversies we've had up to now. You touched on it with GMOs, that one particular issue that people had in mind is you could take something from one species and put it in an entirely different one. And there were many related areas of concerns and concerns about health issues and so forth. And And then with that, there are also concerns about potential allergies and you know, wondering about the health effects and so forth. And that led us to GMO labeling. The GMO labeling, which is still in some transitions of some states passing it and attempts to either get it done in you know, Congress or those that are opposed to getting anything done in Congress. But that's a whole area. Now, is it possible that even if GMO labeling took place, it would, might be inadequate to describe whatever these new technologies are that are coming down the pike?
That is correct. Because the companies developing these technologies are calling them fermentation, which in essence, that's what they're doing. They're fermenting. They're doing what they normally do, those algae and yeast. But they themselves have been genetically modified. But the product that they're emitting is not a genetically modified organism in itself. So companies are calling them just naturally fermented. They're already occurring in products that are labeled as natural. There's absolutely no regulation. There's no testing. There's no oversight on these technologies in the U.S. The EU is actually looking at and very concerned about these technologies. And they're looking to label them as a genetically modified organism and develop regulations around that.
So what would be the process here? Where does it start? Is it the Food and Drug Administration or Environmental Protection Agency? Where was this going to need to get focused?
You can probably definitely submit comments to both the EPA and the FDA and the USDA. Because right now the regulation of GMOs is very murky between those three entities, and there's a framework out there for GMO technology that they're trying to figure out who's going to regulate what. And because these new technologies don't really have a title and they're not falling under GMOs, I think it's prudent to make comments that these emerging technologies deserve to be tested and deserve regulation before they enter into the market, and that's absolutely not happening right now.
What's supposed to be the benefit from them? Why are these going to be pursued anyway?
That's a good question. So let's take vanilla. Vanilla, if you're buying vanilla for your ice cream product, you're having to go to maybe 100 different small vanilla growers in the equatorial regions of the world and gather up the vanilla beans from them. And that's time consuming, that's expensive. If you can go to a company in San Francisco that has a vat that's making vanillin, which is bioidentical, it's this algae's, you know, creating this vanilla product, but vanilla flavored product. It's much cheaper to do that, and but what you're doing is you're taking away the potential livelihood of those vanilla growers, and without that, you know, great devastation could happen with the forests in those equatorial areas because they wouldn't have now their vanilla trade to rely on.
Are any of these products going to be used for animal feed in some way that might enhance lower cost feed or you know, faster gain or anything like that?
So they are doing some genetic engineering, and it's the new technologies to create, let's say, a cow without a horn,
right,
or pigs that don't have certain viruses. But what we're doing is we're putting a Band-Aid on a way of raising animals that isn't humane. We're putting them in confined animal feeding operations. And what we really need to do is look at how we raise animals for our food and make that a just way of raising them rather than engineering them so that they can live in these confined situations.
But I would imagine, too, I mean, there's something to be said for if animals didn't have horns or, you know, that might be a good thing. And even if they're not in confinement, I would imagine they would grow faster or get bigger or whatever, even if they're out in pastures. So I would that part of it, I would suspect there's some benefit.
There definitely could. There definitely could. Another technology that I just want to bring forward that has controversy, especially in the natural foods industry, is there's two companies. One's called Mufri and Clara Foods, and they're using synthetic biology, the algae and yeast, to create milk that's not from cows. It's from these yeasts. And they're creating Clara Foods is creating egg whites from yeasts. And so there's the argument, especially among vegans or animal rights people, that those are just and good things to do. But what we're not looking at is how, if that was done on a grand scale and we eliminated all the CAFO egg whites, what would the feedstock that would, where's the feedstock coming that's needed to feed those algae? And that's probably sugar, palm, sugars that are GMO modified.
Well, it's really a fascinating area, and it's disconcerting because I don't know how the average person keeps up with this. I mean, technology in general is moving so fast that it's hard to keep track of all of the technology that's being offered to us through our iPhones and everything else these days. But when a consumer hears about this, I'm sure they're thinking, well, this should be regulated, that we should be on top of these technologies. I mean, I'm sure there's also is the hope that some of these technologies will do something that's useful and helpful, and maybe there'll be drought resistance, and maybe there'll be disease resistance. But is there a regulatory system that can keep on top of it all and keep in front of it? Do you feel like it's adequate currently? I'm guessing not.
I don't think there is none, so it's not adequate. There's no regulatory oversight and no testing before these products come out. And you're correct. There could be some gains made, but there definitely needs to be regulation, testing, and then labeling, because people deserve to know if their food is coming from a lab or if it's coming from the soil.
Well, and the lab issue, there's so many things about genetics, and that gets into one of the people that have been defending GMOs have said, well, we have other scary things in the breeding programs. I mean, that we talk about GMOs, but there's also breeding systems that use radiation and that use heavy chemicals, and most consumers wouldn't be expected to know about that. Not that they have to get all concerned, but I guess what I'm saying is it's difficult to imagine maybe a label big enough to accommodate all the things that we don't quite understand. GMO labeling aside,
yes,
there's all these other things that you're talking about that it's hard to imagine what that label might look like.
Right.
So if you, what would be the progress in this area? What would you and other leaders that are concerned about this like to see happen you would feel would be a step forward?
I'd like to see the precautionary principle go into effect so that as companies are developing new food technologies, that they're adequately tested and their ability to escape into the environment is also taken into consideration. I would like to see certain regulations about how these products come out into the market, and I'd also like to see labeling.
Well, now that leads to another area too, I think, and that is if this did happen as you've described it, what's to keep some other country that doesn't have rules and regulations from bringing product into this country, and we have no idea how whether or not it was properly regulated in that country?
We probably need global oversight for sure. You know, I don't have the answer to that.
Well, I don't have the answer to it either. That's the reason I asked the question, because I think that even if we do as good a job as we can, and I think in the United States, I think on food safety issues, I think we're one of the best in the world. There's some other very good countries too, but on technology, it could really be the Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
There have been talks of different organizations or companies being able to be like on an aircraft carrier, park it out in the ocean somewhere and do all sorts of strange technologies and so forth. But there certainly are countries around the world that aren't regulated as well as we are. And you've been pointing out we're not regulated well enough in some of these areas.
Right.
Is there a way that this becomes part of the conversation, too, of looking at the global threat of these changes and how it might, the implications of trade, of product coming into the United States that wouldn't be regulated?
Yeah, I think that would be that would come with the regulation here and in alignment with the EU, that we look at products coming in and we have people signing affidavits. I mean, there's no way, right now, there's no way to even test for some of these products to see if some of these products are in the things that we're eating or some of these technologies are in the products that we're using right now. There's no test. We're the Friends of the Earth and the Etc. group, we're working on finding somebody that can do a test, but there it really depends on transparency and affidavits right now.
Around the country, I imagine there's a lot of universities where there are young scientists that
yes.
are feeling like, boy, this is a great area, and they're hoping to do something very, very positive.
Absolutely.
And they want to get involved, and they want to be helpful, and they have all the best intentions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How do you connect with that scientific community? I'm sorry, I'm asking you these tough questions because, again, I don't have the answer.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking. But how do we connect with these young scientists, with these people that are saying, I really want to do a good job. I want to help, you know, the food system in America. I want to come up with technologies that are safe and really contribute something. I wonder how we are going to reach out to them to be able to have them participate in finding, you know, solutions and being, you know, making a positive contribution.
Yeah, I don't want to come off as anti-science because I do think that we can make breakthroughs and we can improve things. I do believe that we need more oversight and we need that precautionary principle in place, and we need to instill that in our young scientists and have them realize that a new product may be great, but let's think about all the implications. You know, there were young scientists back in the 40s that were making DDT. And that was, you know, the Brave New World and all the chemicals that we were spraying to make the Green Revolution. And at the end of the day, we realized many, many years later that that was very harmful to the environment. So, you know, we're probably repeating ourselves in that we're not stepping back and saying, let's test this, let's make sure it's not harmful, and let's not let science and industry just run ahead of what's right for the environment and the people.
You've mentioned the precautionary principle a couple of times. Could you expand on that a little bit more? What does that mean? I know it's used a lot in Europe.
That really means that you don't go forward with a product or an action unless you know that it does no harm. So you don't assume that it's safe and then later on you find out it's not. You first prove that it is safe. You have to prove that, and then it can enter the market.
You've also mentioned, you know, science and industry, and it seems like that's where it has to come from. Maybe the science is involved right now, but is it an issue that there's less funding available for the public institutions to do this independently unless it's a company that is funding their research that has an interest in getting something to the market that they can get a return for their stockholders?
Absolutely. And I think that is where government agencies need to step in and put a little bit of safety around some of those things and say, yes, it's funded by the private sector, but we also need to make sure that it's safe for people in the environment in the long run. A lot of these technologies, you know, are brand new to our bodies and to our environment. And, you know, we've been evolving over millions of years. And to introduce brand new genetically modified or tinkered with entities is, you know, entering a brave new world. And we need to step into that world with precaution.
How many organizations would you guess are involved in this?
Yeah, there's quite a few, you know, some more than others, but the natural foods industry is very concerned because natural products have a persona with the consumer that they're pure and that they're not modified and that they don't have synthetic ingredients. And these products are probably already entering into the natural foods market. and the natural products market. So there's a risk there that that consumer, if they find out that they're buying something that's natural, they could find out that this has been tinkered with genetically and lose faith in the whole brand. Certainly, the organic community is very concerned, and the National Organic Standards Board is actually bringing this up at their next meeting. That's the advisory board that gives advice to the National Organic Program. They'll be bringing this subject up in their, I think it's April, the end of April they meet, and they'll be talking about excluded methods and many of these new technologies such as synthetic biology.
So if people are wanting to watch this and have some inputs as this evolves, is there a way that people can see the agenda or see, is the meeting live streamed or anything? Is there a way for people to monitor that conversation or make inputs into it?
Mm-hmm. It's not live streamed. You can show up in person, and you can also give written comments. And I believe they're going to do webinars so that you can also call in and give public comment on a webinar. The meetings are in D.C. at the end of May, the last week of May. And you can find out more about this by going to the National Organic Program. If you just Google that, and then the NOSB, National Organic Standards Board meeting, and you can see the agenda, you can see when they're taking comments, and you can get involved.
Well, one final thing I wanted to touch on, and that is everybody's noticed we're in the middle of a political year. It's just a crazy year, this campaign that's going on and on and on. But it will end up later this year with the conventions. And in these conventions, there'll be forming platforms on food and agriculture and coming up with planks in the platform is what they used to call it, although everything's changing this campaign, so that might be slightly changed too. But I wonder if there'll be opportunities for organizations to see these presidential candidates still address and develop a point of view about an issue like this.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the larger candidates are concerned about funding, and some of that funding does come from some of the companies that are making these technologies. So, you know, not to mention any names, but it's hard to make headway with the politicians on this issue.
Well, and that maybe is why there's so much mistrust this year.
Yes.
This emerging area, if consumers and others that have a strong interest in the food system, if they want to learn more about it, follow the issue, or somehow become engaged, what would you suggest to them?
There's a couple organizations. There's Friends of the Earth, FOE.org, and they have a whole section on synthetic biology and emerging technologies. And then there's another organization called the ETC, like et cetera group. So ETC group. And they have a remarkable amount of information about what these emerging technologies are and the potential ramifications of them.
Well, and Melody, you have a blog yourself. What's your blog? Because you occasionally talk about this issue.
Yes, I have a current blog now on this issue, and it's organicmattersblog.com. And if you go to that blog and just search for synthetic biology, you'll find three or four different blog posts on that.
Melody, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. I really appreciate your being here with us on Farm to Table Talk. Melody Myers, Vice President of Policy and Industry Relations with the United Natural Foods. She has a blog she just mentioned, and she's paying attention to many areas that concern all of us that have an interest in our food system. Melody, thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.